and welcome to Vista Talks, interesting discussions with interesting people from all around the world. I'm your host for today, Simon Hodgkins, and I'm delighted to be joined by Pedro Guerra Ribeiro. Pedro, you're a professional with extensive experience when it comes to project and vendor management, and of course, localization analysis. I know you're passionate about helping companies bridge that sort of experience gap when it comes to global reach, local impact, and particularly in your current role at Qualtrics, a company that's known to many people around the world. Now, you've got a bachelor's degree in political science and international relations from the University of Nova in Lisbon. You've a double degree, master's in political science and Central and Eastern European politics. So you're in the right space to be a guest here on Vista Talks. You know, we love talking to interesting people. And look, throughout your career, I know that you've been sort of well known in the technology and localization industry. You've also worked for Vista Tech, of course. You're no stranger to Vista Tech and Vista Talks, the podcast. But with your experience managing projects, you know, vendors in the localization field, it's equipped you with some valuable insights. And I'm hoping we can maybe get into a few of those on today's episode of the show. Obviously, the challenges and the strategies that are involved in delivering projects on time, within budget, and of course, to high quality standards. So look, Pedro, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here, my friend.
Thank you, Simon. And thank you for the lovely, lovely introduction. It's worked in Vistatech. It was a great time working there. Worked there for like 2.5 years. Loved the time there. And I've learned a lot. So actually a lot that I kind of do still today on project management is something that I've learned while I worked at Vistatech. I had a great team around me, a great team of project managers. I actually started as a project coordinator at Vistatech. So right at the start, so I was just a sponge ready to learn from everybody around me. And I learned so much. And I think a lot of that I brought to my current role as on the project management side. And that's a big question, right? How do you make sure that you deliver everything on time, you put it within costs, within the budget, and has the right, you know, the highest quality? And I think sometimes people get really stuck in the details, especially since now I work on the buyer side. What I try to understand is try to translate what are the needs of my colleagues, the different stakeholders, the different teams, because we'd be working on marketing localization projects, we'd be working on software localization, we'd be help content, events marketing. There are so many different kinds of localization needs that not all of them need the same treatment, right? And not all of them carry the same budget. Not all of them carry the same flexibility or lack of flexibility for timelines. So at the start of any project we do currently is trying to understand what is the team behind it and what do they need and what sort of budgets are they working on. And we kind of work backwards from there to understand what is the quality, right? We try to be realistic in terms of if we want the highest quality possible when we reach out to a vendor, we have to ensure we have the right amount of time for that, right? Good quality takes time. Good quality takes more money than, you know, just kind of more quick standard quality. So we try to decide those things and figure out how we can do that to meet the goals of the teams, right? So maybe if I'm talking about the help content delivery, budgets is much lower. There's a high volume of content that needs to be worked on, but maybe we don't need Shakespearean levels of content to be delivered. So in those regards, we would try to look at different service, different levels of combination of the service level we have with the vendor and the costs and the timelines. While maybe if I'm discussing the launch of a website, we really want that high level transcreation. It needs to be feel local, the tone, and therefore the cost is a bit higher at the start, at least. And then it all depends a bit on negotiations that we have between, you know, the LSPs and our colleagues to understand, can we invest X amount of money or not? Does that match the timeline that we have? Then to me, this is all the prep work. And I think when the project is in flight, like making sure that we manage this quality, we manage the timeline, I think two very important things for me is communication and transparency. And I think that's where the human approach comes into project management, because otherwise we will all be replaced by AI soon. If all I'm going to say is to have, you know, a big project tracker with all the project line, I take this as baseline for any project. You have a big way overview of looking at all your projects, all your costs, making sure everything is going on time. But past that, I think what really helps in project management is really being an active communicator between the translators and the vendors, and also our stakeholders, right? These are two different teams that sometimes don't even speak the same language. So being able to translate what, let's say, the software team needs to the translators and translate the translator questions back to the software team who doesn't really consider those questions normally. So I think communication is key to be able to provide constant information to the stakeholders, and not only on my side, on the vendor side, for example, something happens in a project because I don't know, a translator got sick, things like that happen. Being quite open and transparent in communicating this to us as clients, to me, is the number one thing, because we all understand that things happen along the way. Not all projects go as planned. But if, let's say, a vendor decides that something happens, but they don't tell us and they just try to pass it on to somebody else, and then we get the project back and maybe the quality is not the same as we're used to, because we're used to this particular translator, right? We don't know them, but we're used to certain style. Then we get something else, which is not what we wanted. What's going to happen is going to cause a lot of friction between me and then my internal stakeholders team. They'll be like, why did I get this file? This doesn't look right. I'll go back to the vendor and then they'll let me know later on, oh, we have to change because the person, the primary translator is not available. Now, if this is told in beforehand, you know, I'm avoiding delays, because now maybe I didn't know about this, I have to push it back, get it retranslated by the person we want. I'm avoiding extra costs by having to pay more, or like, especially in marketing terms, the extra cost might not be something that a vendor adds to a quote. But every day that a certain marketing asset is not online, it's not generating pipelines, not generating interest, it's not generating leads, right? So we are losing money in another way. We're not losing money because we pay more for the quotes. We're losing money because the project is not being delivered in the way that we want. So I think generally speaking, yeah, communication, transparency between my stakeholders, myself, and the translators and the vendors, I think that really goes a long way to ensuring that you have, you know, the timeline is met, or if it's not met, you communicate ahead of time so people can get ready instead of being surprised. Nobody likes being surprised on the day they have a launch that the thing is not ready or it's not the right quality. I would say those are two main things.
Yeah, you covered a lot of ground there, because you're not only talking about the different types of content and to some degree the different types of quality or treatment that are applied, but also mm-hmm. there's different technologies, whether it's AI, as you mentioned, or MT, or the human in mm-hmm. the loop, or that sort of high quality, what did you call it, that Shakespearean level quality that you mentioned. But I think people in the localization language and this industry will understand what you mean, that it's different. And also a really important point that you mentioned there was, if you know about things beforehand, it saves an awful lot of time, because often we just consider that initial relationship and, oh, it's not quite the mm-hmm. same as what I got before. But it's not mm-hmm. just that, is it? It's what mm-hmm. the knock-on impact of that is with mm-hmm. where that content was going to be mm-hmm. used. And I think that's a really mm-hmm. relevant point that you raised. So let me ask mm-hmm. you another mm-hmm. question then. You mentioned communication, which is obviously part of that challenge, but there must be other challenges that you face when you're managing projects, particularly mm-hmm. maybe with vendors in the localization industry, or it could just be within your own internal teams. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to those big challenges, how do you overcome them? You know, given your experience, mm-hmm. Pedro, what do you do to overcome these challenges?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. I think that I kind of touched upon it a little bit, but I'd say expectations and the clarity of what's in scope, right? I think that sometimes, and this is something that happens towards the vendors, against the vendor, which is a project set up and sent to be worked on by a vendor from a client, and it's just not very clear. There's a lot of assumptions being made on the client side that the vendor side will understand, and then vice versa. There's some assumptions from the vendor side that they're making from the client that that's not meant, right? I'm saying that maybe I send the project and I think that everything is clear, because from all the meetings I've had with internal stakeholders, I've had plenty of time to go through documents, to look into it. So when I'm sending, I'm having a little bit of my bias, and that has happened with me preparing projects. It has happened to me when I was on the vendor side of project manager, and you get this project that while it's somewhat clear, it's not, a lot of subtleties are not clear of what you intend on some terminology or some of the style, some of the tone. And of course, as a vendor, when you get this project from a client, you know there's always some questions you ask. But generally speaking, you kind of assume that, well, this is a project. I can see this is a work count. This is a service type. This is the language. You look at it like this is ready to go. But maybe there's some little details that were not communicated beforehand from the client side, and then maybe they're not asked proactively. Let's say from the vendor side. But I wouldn't put all the blame on the vendor. I would share very well the blame on both sides. That instructions are not clear. Therefore, when the project is done, we get it back. It doesn't look exactly as it should. And it's very often that on the client side, we'll just put the blame on the vendor, like, oh, you did not deliver what I wanted. Sometimes that happens, but I think more often than not is there's a misalignment on what is expected. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges I face as a project manager on the vendor side, getting projects with instructions which are not clear. And even preparing projects and going through that bias of thinking, oh no, I think this is super clear, what is there? And then I get questions back from vendors and I'm like, you're right, I did not consider that. I didn't consider another thing. I did not explain to you exactly what is needed. I think that's one of the biggest challenges, because that leads to projects also taking longer to prepare, projects not being completed to the level that is assumed or wanted by the client. I would say that's one of the number one issues. And then I guess sometimes is in terms of translators' queries and questions. In terms of the client side, sometimes the client does not have even the internal resources to reply to all the linguistic questions that translators might have. Let's say you're working on a big multilingual website, and maybe in, let's say, like on a client, you'll have different people which have knowledge, language skills on those different languages, but they're not linguists. So while they might help in terms of tone, maybe they really know about the terminology, they might not really know about the translation grammar part. So it's on those types of questions that I think the clients really need good partners on the vendor side, really good translators. I think it's super okay, and we should incentivize more questions from translators, more questions for PMs, a more open culture of asking questions. We do that a lot at Qualtrics, actually. And since we've done that, we've actually, with the help of translators, we've managed to solve a bunch of issues. Just by allowing translators to feel free to just asking questions. We find many, you know, issues on our source content that then we manage to go back and fix things that are prepared and written and they're not really correct. So I think figuring out those assumptions, figuring out those instructions, making them clear, it's one of the biggest challenges, but when you get it right, that's one way of the project going really, really nicely till the end.
Yeah, I think, again, it's another great point, because it really comes down to that trust and that relationship and that partnership, I suppose. You're talking about vendors there, but it is really a relationship, and it's been in partnership with somebody that has the knowledge, has the expertise, has that global understanding of projects and clients. Yeah, it's really important. Now, look, I mentioned earlier, you're obviously this localization analyst, and, you know, vendor and project management at Qualtrics and everything that goes along with that. But let's take a quick step back. Why did you get into this industry in the first place? What made you pursue a career in this line of work? How did you get started, Pedro?
That's a great question. As you said at the beginning, I didn't study translation. I didn't study interpreting or localization studies per se. I studied political science, international relations, sort of cultural studies. And that's what I was really, since high school, I was really into it. I always knew I wanted to work on an international environment. Always knew. I'm originally from Portugal, but I always knew I wanted to live abroad and have that experience and even work in that context. Right? So I first went with my, teenage angst activist kind of look into politics. I want to learn more politics. How is the world working? How can I fix it? But throughout those academic years, I lived abroad. I lived in Poland. I studied there, and I studied in Japan as well for a year. And was throughout that time that I kind of got more into the cross-cultural communication side of things. When I finished my master's, I moved to Dublin, you know, to seek my fortunes and the big smoke, as they call it. And it just, I found a junior project management job, like really entry level in the local Irish translation company. And that's when I thought, you know, I could do translation. You know, I speak a couple languages. I mean, I have no background in translation, but it was the kind of job that they would allow someone to come and just learn the craft. And I did that for about a year and a half. And what I understood throughout the year and a half is that the project that I really enjoy was projects related to marketing, websites, app localization, software localization, which we only had a few. It was such a small company. We only had a few of those projects. So it was at that time that I found Visitech, and you know, I jumped to Visitech and learned way more about localization. I think that's where I learned the majority of my knowledge in localization. And it was kind of a different approach, right? I had to study a lot and read a lot and watch a lot of webinars at the start, because I just fell on this world where I was surrounded by people with a translation background, localization background, interpreting background. They really understood the technology and the language. And I came from outside. And some people sometimes would say that comes as sort of as a disadvantage. I do think to a certain extent it comes as an advantage, because localization is a little bit of a niche industry, I think, but we are providing value to a lot of other industries that are not really aware of localization. So coming from the same trajectory of someone who doesn't know anything and trying to understand, trying to make it easy to understand, trying to grasp the concepts of localization, I think that really helps me when I explain back localization nowadays to my colleagues who don't come from that world, right? So I just kind of fell onto this world because it just ended up connecting what I really love, which is cross-cultural communication. Right? Localization ends up doing this. I remember working in such a cool project back in the day with Cherokee language. And I mean, like, how many people in their life can say they work on translating into Cherokee? It was such an interesting, cool project to then see it to fruition. So yeah, I don't have a particular, I'd say, love for language. I wouldn't consider myself a language nerd in the sense that I'll love all this little, I dislike grammar to high extent, but I love localization. I love the idea of translating concepts to different languages, of opening markets, of reaching out to more people. I think that's such a cool and important part of the world we have, being such a big world, but we're so tightly connected nowadays, so quick to reach the other side of the world, that localization is such an important part of that. So seeing that impact on a daily, you know, job, it's what keeps me going and what keeps me in this industry.
So Pedro, as somebody who maybe came to it from the outside, who's certainly an insider today, with your knowledge and expertise, you must see a lot of emerging trends, a lot of new technologies, a lot of promises that are given in the industry. But when it comes to localization, when it comes to the landscape, is there anything from a technology or a trend perspective that you're excited about? Or how do you see this industry shaping up as we go forward?
Mm-hmm. I think that's such a great question. I think we're all in the localization industry are quite excited about the product. I think it is a buzzword right now. What I'm going to say, it is generative AI. It is, you know, large language models. I think those two are the two most recent. They're not that recent if you consider them, but the most recent impactful technologies that are coming into the localization world. And I don't see them as, you know, something that will replace, for example, machine translation, as I think a lot of people were probably thinking about it, but something that's going to add value to, or it's going to change what machine translation is. And this is something that we're looking at a lot here at Qualtrics internally and alongside our partners, our localization partners, which is how is this technology developing? I think it's still a bit of early days, but I think like almost every couple of weeks, something big happens, something really a big progress is happening. I try to keep up to date with, you know, most of the localization, let's say, news outlets or newsletters out there to try to figure out how things are going. And I think generative AI and LLMs are going to bring a lot of value when they integrate with MT. So I think vendors are probably looking into this a lot in seeing like how can they create some sort of service and value to their clients out of this. I think what it's going to mean is that the potential of, you know, translating even more content potentially, and maybe adding a little bit of a creative twist to machine translation, right? So with the idea of generative AI and LLMs, if they're really well-trained, maybe there's MT can be a little bit more creative, a little bit less tight as it is. So like maybe sometimes in the future, we might say, you know, you can use machine translation raw for, you know, help content, and you can use machine translation raw for like email copy. I don't know, maybe. And I think it's gonna be quite impactful. There's a big impact in terms of client slash vendor partnership in terms of projects. I think as a translator, it's definitely something to be aware of, because I think more and more translators will probably become reviewers, post editors, or prompt designers. I don't know if that's gonna be a thing. People are gonna become prompt designers or something like that. But definitely language is a skill that is needed forever. So I think if anything, this technology is gonna just create new business. I don't think it's replacing and removing. I think it's creating something new, changing, which is always something good. I think if this means that we can have more content out there for more people, on a macro sense, it's a good thing for the localization industry.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. So Pedro, there's only one more thing I want to ask you before we come to the end of our time here today. And it's really around something we touched on briefly, which was mm-hmm. about bridging this gap between global reach and local impact. So is there anything else you'd like to share with our audience today? And in particular, in the context of, you know, getting that local mm-hmm. impact and getting that global reach, because you've talked a lot today about the importance of communication, the importance mm-hmm. of getting your message out there. So that's really my last question for you today.
And it's a great question. Trying to understand that, how to bridge that gap, it's something that I've always thought about, but only really materialized as a thought process when I joined Qualtrics, because that's what Qualtrics does in terms of the services we provide in different industries. But I kind of translated that mindset into localization, right? Because I think that the highest value we can give is, you know, a company that is global, but in each location it is, you feel it as a local company. You feel it. So if you're using Qualtrics in Portugal, for example, you don't feel it. You're using an American, US company. You're working on the Qualtrics Portuguese side. Or if you're in Japan, you're working with Qualtrics Japan. And there's that local feel. And I think that's something that a lot of brands have managed to do it. You know, Coca-Cola's and things like that. You know, you never drink a Coca-Cola and think you're drinking an American beverage, you're drinking Coca-Cola. And it's a local feeling. Everybody has their image of drinking whatever juice it is in their towns, at the beach, in the park, whatever it is. And trying to bridge that gap, it's something that it's only possible, in my opinion, with the collaboration from the client with the vendor or the partner. Actually, I prefer to use the term partner. I know vendor is the technical term, I guess, but as you mentioned even before, I think having that partner relationship, it's much more important, because you will only do these two things. You'll only bridge that gap with that collaboration with translators and linguists, people who are from these markets. They understand the language, they understand the market as well, especially when you're talking about marketing content or product content. And the best way is translating business goals from our company into localization goals towards the vendor, to the partner, right? Because I think sometimes people kind of, and this is something that I've learned only recently this year, people do think that localization is an end, but it's not for our teams. For the teams I work with, localization is a means to their ends. And it's sometimes only a portion of the means, right? It's not the full means that they need. So again, if you're a product team, you're thinking about the launch of the feature, you're thinking about the codes, you're thinking about your managers telling you need to get this out for that day, and then all the other metrics you're working on. Localization is a tiny thing. And in the localization industry, we do complain about how, and which is true, how little we are thought out about in that those long processes of other teams. But what we need to understand is that localization needs to generate that value to those teams. And the only way to generate value is to translate their business goals into a localization project towards the partner, and then allowing those translators and those experts and those partners to do what they do best, which is to localize the content. For them to localize best, we need their expertise on the market, on the regions, and for them to understand our global branding, it's on us to provide, you know, clear instructions, prepare proper style guides, terminology, briefing documents, as much information as possible to try to make these linguists almost part of our team, right? Like we can't all hire all the linguists and they all work internally with us. So we have to try to bridging that gap starts here on the operational side. And then you feel it later on the product side when the, you know, the end user, the client is using Qualtrics in this sense, and they actually have this feeling, they understand there's help, you know, help content, support content in their language, and it's well localized. They can call somebody in that speaks their language, right? So it goes in the above localization for towards localization. And all those little things, they have a big impact, right? I think that's something we kind of don't notice working on the localization industry day to day, is the big impact we have actually on the world together, right? Not individually, but all of us together, I think that seeing that value of localization, you don't notice. Good localization, you don't notice. And we forget that this happens. And sometimes, you know, we lose grasp of that. And I think that's the highest value of this industry is making, you know, something that is global, local, making something just local, go global both ways. I think it's a magical thing. Doesn't sound as magical in the day-to-day replying to emails, doing your operational stuff, but this is what you do in the end.
Look, I think that's a great answer, and it's a lovely place to bring this episode to a close on. You've covered an awful lot in the localization landscape. You've took us on a journey from generative AI to generating value. And I think it's been a wonderful conversation. So thanks to Pedro. Thanks to everybody who's been tuning in to see and listen or watch this episode of Vista Talks. I hope you'll join me back here where once again, we'll be discussing some more interesting topics with interesting people like Pedro from all around the world. But thank you so much indeed for being a guest on Vista Talks, Pedro. It's been a pleasure to talk to you today.
The pleasure was all mine. Thank you so much, Simon. And thank you, Vista Talks, for inviting me. This was great.